Today on Maine Calling, the latest news on immigration and customs enforcement in Maine. A lot has happened since the surge of ICE activity in Maine began 2 weeks ago. Where do things stand today? Has the ICE activity subsided, as promised? Have immigrants here in Maine returned to school and work, or are they still feeling unsafe? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll try to get a sense of where we are and some of the repercussions of the ICE surge. Maine legislators are considering emergency legislation that would limit where immigration enforcement officers can enter without a judicial warrant. Budget negotiations in Congress could have a direct impact on the way ICE operates. And many Maine businesses have developed new policies and procedures in the face of enhanced ICE activity. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today we're going to take stock of where things stand with immigration enforcement in Maine, what the outlook is for now. We'll also find out what lawmakers are doing regarding ICE operations. Joining me for the hour is Patrick Woodcock, who is president and CEO of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you observed any ICE activity since last week? What is happening in your community? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we turn to Patrick Woodcock, we are going to be talking with Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. She represents Maine's 1st District. Congresswoman Pingree, I understand you're at the airport?
Yeah, I hope it's not too noisy, but thanks for having me.
That's okay. And you're headed back to Washington, D.C. What is the latest on the House voting on Homeland Security funding?
So we'll take up the rule maybe later today or tomorrow and then have a formal vote on this funding bill. It came back from the Senate attached to a variety of other funding bills. So that makes it a little more complicated because when we voted on the House, we could vote up or down on Homeland Security. So there's probably a lot of machinations that have to take place before we get to that point. But as you may know, the Senate granted a 2-week extension to the Homeland Security funding bill to try to negotiate a variety of things, things like, you know, get ICE out of Minnesota, stop the racial profiling, demand ICE agents don't wear masks, use body cameras. Ideally, we'd like to take out some of the money that they got in the Big Ugly Bill, which is what is sort of funding this huge increase in ICE officers and sort of the surges in our cities. But a lot will happen between now and the end of this week, but hopefully we'll fund the things we need to fund in government. And as far as I'm concerned, not give another penny to Homeland Security and ICE.
Yeah, Congresswoman Pingree, just reading the tea leaves, getting a sense from your colleagues, what is your sense of whether in the end there will be more limitations placed on ICE agents?
Well, I think it's going to be very hard for the Republicans to pass this package unless they agree to some of them. And frankly, many of them watch the shooting of the two American citizens, the excessive operations that are going on in places like Minnesota, even what we saw in Maine, where people are being picked up who are legitimately here in this country, who have, you know, all the documentation that they need. And I know you're going to hear from Patrick Woodcock. I mean, we've been hearing from so many employers, and this is true in Minnesota. This is very damaging to the economy when people are afraid to go to work or they're losing their employees who they know have work permits and they've got all the documentation for. So I think it's going to be an interesting bipartisan issue. I don't think it's strictly, you know, Democrats who are concerned about what's going on. And I know the White House is concerned about how bad this looks. I mean, they're just mismanaging this agency, and we want to see a lot more control on it.
Congresswoman, what's your assessment of what's going on in Maine? Do you believe that indeed there has been a pause in this enhanced activity, a permanent pause? And also, I'm wondering if you have any sense of what is going on with the 200 or so people who were removed from Maine?
Yeah, as far as we can tell, based on the activity around the one ICE facility in Scarborough, the number of calls that have been coming in since the surge of officers seems to have moved out. I do believe that they have stopped their surge of operations. And I just want to be clear, my office has gotten nearly twice as many immigration issues over the last year as we did previously. So many of the things that this administration is doing to make it more difficult for people who are legally in this country, the asylum seekers, the people who have court dates, the people who are having a hard time getting their work permits renewed, I believe much of that is going to continue. So I don't think we can completely let our guard down or think that immigration is in a healthy place. So I'm still very concerned about what's going on. But I think the excessive surge of the number of officers that were here and these random stops and checks of both the observers and of immigrants. Now, in terms of the over 200 people who are moved out of the state, we are doing the best we can with our incredible casework team, just trying to help track people down. We're seeing a real decline in this administration using the tracking system. So for lawyers and family members who used to be able to find out where their family members were, it's much more difficult. And this goes to people's legal representation or, as I said, family members. They've also been moved out of the state extremely quickly. So either Massachusetts or as far away as Louisiana and Texas. So we are, you know, full speed ahead trying to find everybody for their family members and for their employees who want to do everything they can to get people back in Maine, because many of them were picked up with no good legal reason. But it is also a strategy of this administration to keep people from their legal representation, to put them in very uncomfortable detainment facilities in places like Texas or Louisiana, and try to coerce them to just voluntarily leave the country and stop their asylum claims or stop their application for green cards. I think it's unconscionable that they would do this. As we know from the stories, these were, you know, single moms. These were heads of household. These were people with babies. I mean, it's really outrageous what they've done. And we're going to do our best to find those 200.
Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, thank you so much for taking some time to call in.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this. Take care.
Yeah, we're going to turn now to Ari Snyder, our Maine public host and news reporter who covers the immigrant community here in Maine. Hi, Ari. And I'm wondering if you are hearing what Congresswoman Pingree is hearing, that yes, indeed, the surge, as people are calling it, seems to have subsided.
Yes, I'm hearing the same thing. And the way that I sort of measure this, it's somewhat imperfect, again, because ICE has not been very transparent with the information they're sharing with us. But when the surge got underway, it was really clear that it was happening. Videos were flooding in on social media. I was hearing from a lot of different people, lawyers, community members, that people were being arrested. They were being taken on their way home from work, pulled over, taken out of their cars, whisked away. So it was really clear that something was different. And then I would say even getting into last weekend, sort of the weekend where we had our big snowstorm, that level of activity already seemed to be diminishing. And a lot of people I was talking to on the ground were saying it feels really quiet. We're not letting our guard down, but it feels really kind of eerily quiet. And then, of course, we got the news from Senator Susan Collins on Thursday that the operation had been paused and the sort of increased activity was being drawn down. That seems to have held. And I think Congresswoman Pingree made this point very clearly, but it's important to remember, of course, that this does not mean the end of immigration enforcement in Maine, because this big operation was not the beginning of immigration enforcement in Maine. ICE has maintained a presence in the state for a long time, and based on some data that I was able to report on last year, ICE arrests in Maine had already increased about 75%. Through October of last year. So we were already seeing an increase in enforcement before this surge. And so the question now, you know, when Senator Collins says that operations will go back to normal levels, the question is, what does that mean? And what is the intensity of immigration enforcement going to look like going forward here?
Ari, you talked about before the what they're calling Operation Catch of the Day happened, that already ICE enforcement had gone up 75% in Maine. Were those people who were arrested you know, before, let's say, before the new year, were they the same kind of people that we saw arrested in the last 2 weeks? Were they people who had work papers, who were had pending asylum claims, or have these been other people with other statuses?
I think it depends, Jen, and that's a really good question. I don't have all the specifics on everyone who was arrested. It can be kind of a scramble to try to find more information about who is being arrested by ICE. But there certainly were cases of people being arrested who were in the asylum process, who had work permits, and some of whom got released because federal judges and federal courts agreed that they shouldn't be held, that they were following a legal process. Ordered bond hearings, and an immigration judge in various cases did grant bond.
All right. You talked about people and the fearfulness that they've had for the last 2 weeks. Are they still feeling that way? People you talk with who are immigrants themselves, who are in touch with the immigrant community, have people decided to go back to work, to go back to school, or not yet?
Yeah, well, it's certainly a case-by-case basis, and Patrick with the chamber will be able to speak to sort of more the employer side. But what I heard late last week, Thursday and Friday, as we got this news that the operation was being paused, was a lot of, is this real? You know, I think a lot of people have a question what they're getting from different sources, whether it be news or social media or word of mouth. And so, I mean, I called some people on Thursday who said, well, is it real? And I said, well, I'm working on the information that we have from Senator Susan Collins, and we have to sort of see what this ends up looking like. But I think there's a lot of wariness, a lot of sort of questioning how safe it was to go out. And then from the sort of organizer standpoint or organizational standpoint, I spoke with the executive director of the Maine Immigrants Rights Coalition last Thursday, and she brought up this question of, you know, OK, so they went from the word they were using was enhanced operations now to targeted. But what does that mean? Who's being targeted? What advice do you give to communities that are still facing enforcement and when there's so little information from the federal government about what this shift or drawdown actually means? So I think there's just a lot of unanswered questions.
Ari, I have to ask you about the news that State Representative Deka Dalak has said that she will not run for re-election in South Portland. Why is this significant?
Well, it's significant because she was one of the first Somali Americans to be elected to the Maine State House. She was the first Somali American mayor in the country when she was elected mayor of South Portland. And she said she's not seeking re-election because she's faced, quote, persistent racism during her time as an elected office holder, and that's just becoming too much to bear, all of those threats and that harassment. She also was very active in sponsoring legislation aimed at reining in police cooperation with ICE in Maine. She sponsored a bill that me and my colleague Kevin Miller, who I believe will be on the show soon, covered earlier last year, aimed at sort of restricting voluntary cooperation between local and state police departments and ICE and other immigration enforcement agents. So she's been an active player in all of this stuff.
Well, Ari, thank you so much for joining us. Ari Snyder, Maine Public host and reporter. Patrick Woodcock, I will turn to you. What are you hearing from employees? Are there employees who were afraid to go to work over the last couple of weeks? Are they coming back?
Well, I think we have to put it in context to where we were over the last 2 weeks. We really hit a point where individuals just weren't showing up for work. And that started having a crisis situation for a lot of employers. Now, the number of employees in our state that are foreign-born is about 29,000. That represents about 4%. And for some employers, that can be disproportionately high. And we really got into a crisis situation where we wrote with the Portland Regional Chamber, the Lewiston-Auburn Metropolitan Chamber, to our congressional delegation that really this is having an economic impact. And I don't want to diminish the other contours, the components of this, but we really saw that from operations in healthcare services to seafood processors. And ultimately, we also saw it for some downtown impacts of people not feeling safe to go into stores. So we did raise this as an economic concern to the congressional delegation last week. I do think, consistent with Ari's assessment, that things are in a new chapter now with the announcement from Senator Collins. It does appear that that is unfolding. But this was, I think, it really calls for the congressional delegation to continue to do oversight on this enforcement. And ultimately, our immigrants in our country cannot really feel safe until we have foundational immigration reform to put them on a legal status in our country.
And Patrick, one of the things I think is really important to discuss today and in the future is how this past 2 weeks has changed systems, has changed people. And I'm wondering about businesses. I'm guessing, and tell me if this is the case, that there are businesses out there that have had to institute policies and procedures that they never even dreamed they would have to.
No, a lot of businesses hiring attorneys, going through the best practices to protect their workers, maintain that their workforce is compliant with a rapidly changing immigration regulatory space, and how do you respond when an enforcement action occurs? We've been trying to disseminate that information. This is new, especially for smaller businesses. But it has been an expense for a lot of businesses. But moreover, it is incredibly important that Maine be successful in integrating new populations into our workforce. We've spoken about this on our program. Demographics and our outlook for a workforce, we need to have a welcoming situation for new workers. That's with English language services, creating community. That's an economic imperative for us. And a lot of employers are stepping up. And I think it's important that we use this situation to really reinforce that Maine has a long-term vision of integrating new populations into our workforce.
Another colleague joins us now, Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House correspondent. Thanks so much for joining us, Kevin. Patrick was just talking about repercussions for businesses. Tell us about legislative repercussions from this ICE presence in Maine, this enhanced ICE activity. There has been a bill now, an emergency bill introduced in the legislature. What would it do?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. So this bill would require staff at schools and hospitals and childcare facilities and public libraries to turn away federal agents, immigration agents, from non-public areas unless they have a warrant that's been signed by a judge. The bill is basically trying to reestablish some of the restrictions that were in place during the Biden administration and during previous administrations around what they called protected areas. These were places, again, like schools and churches and hospitals and even at funerals. It basically saying, immigration agents have to stand back. They shouldn't go into those places. Trump rescinded that policy on his first day back in office last year. And this bill wouldn't apply to all those places. For instance, it wouldn't affect churches, but it does aim to make it harder for agents to enter schools or libraries or hospitals. And the big question there is over enforcement. Can this really stop a federal agency from entering these spaces? But that's a debate we'll certainly see play out in the legislature.
Well, what is the timeline for this legislation? And also, from talking to other legislators, do you think it's likely to pass?
Well, as far as the timeline, the legislature, this is a short session of the legislature, so they're trying to wrap up by mid-April. The odds of it passing, I'd say, it's extremely unlikely, I'd say, for it to pass as an emergency measure, because that would require two-thirds votes in both the House and the Senate, and I don't expect they're going to have the Republican votes to pass it. But it has earned the support from Governor Mills, and from the Mills administration. I think a lot of Democrats are going to get behind it, so I'd say there's a decent odds of it passing. You never know, especially in the House, because the House is really closely divided, and there might be some Democrats that are uncomfortable with this, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see.
Kevin, let's talk a minute about Senator Collins, because she's been at the center of what's been going on for the last week. Some people have really been applauding her that she advocated for the halt of increased ICE agents in Maine. Others say, you know what, she still voted for ICE funding. What is the sense of what people's attitudes, reactions are towards Senator Collins after this past week?
Well, I guess not surprisingly, it does seem to fall along party lines and partisan lines. And, you know, this is all getting wrapped up in the race for Senate, for Senator Collins' seat. You know, according to Senator Collins, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, she said she was ending this immigration surge because, you know, partly because of Collins' intervention. That's what Collins is saying. She does have some negotiating tools here as the chair of the Appropriations Committee and as one of these key frequent Republican swing votes on issues. So arguably she probably had some pretty good pressure tactics that she could use with Kristi Noem to reduce its presence here. What the opponents are saying, and we're hearing this from Graham Blattner, we're hearing this from Governor Mills, who are both her two leading Democratic opponents, are saying she's still not doing enough because she voted for this spending bill that initially voted for the spending bill that included funding for ICE and Homeland Security. As Representative Pingree said, that's now kind of been put on hold potentially for 2 weeks if the bill passes, if the other appropriations bills pass the House. But what Senator Collins is saying is, look, there are reforms in that. There's $20 million in there for body cameras and $2 million for de-escalation training for ICE agents. But she says that it's important to look at all the other things that are in this DHS funding, you know, Coast Guard, FEMA. And so she has said, you know, she's open to having these negotiations about potential other reforms, but we need to get this funding done. But that's not been enough from what we're hearing from Governor Mills and from Graham Blattner and from her critics to say that she needs to be doing more.
Patrick, you have a question for Kevin.
You know, I do wonder also about the long-term outlook for immigration reform. We certainly welcomed the suspension of the enhanced enforcement activities and appreciate what will hopefully be a bipartisan effort to review current activities. But I want to be clear, we have, you know, 75% of the foreign-born population in Maine do have permanent status. They are naturalized citizens. The 25%, regardless of funding for Homeland Security, they are really on a precipice for their long-term legal status. I looked up the long-term success rate for asylum seekers. Going back 10 years, it's about 20-25%. That's a key section of remaining in our immigrant community. And ultimately, this can only be resolved through Congress coming together to create a better management of those who are on fragile status or are in our country with an unauthorized status. So I'm hopeful that we actually learn not only on improving the oversight of immigration customs enforcement, but we also come together for a long-term pathway to address what has really plagued this country going on 2-3 decades.
Kevin, we do need to go to a break, but I'll ask you, are you hearing anything from anybody in the congressional delegation about any conversation right now about immigration reform in Congress?
Well, everybody talks about immigration reform, has been talking about it for years and years, but the political reality of getting it done in Washington is always complicated. I'm happy to dive into that more after the break if you want.
Okay, let's do that. And we have other important callers calling in. That was Kevin Miller, our State House correspondent, going to stay with us for just a little bit. And we do need to take a quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine has experienced a turbulent time due to the surge of immigration enforcement starting 2 weeks ago. Today, we are updating the latest developments on the ICE operation in Maine and the ripple effect it had Our panelist for the hour, Patrick Woodcock, President CEO of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Also with us for a little while longer, State House correspondent Kevin Miller with Maine Public. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about the repercussions of the ICE operations here in Maine? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Mark Dion, who is mayor of the city of Portland. Thanks for calling in, Mayor Dion.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
What are you hearing? What's going on in Portland today? What happened over the weekend?
The volume of text or phone calls or email messages surrounding ICE-related events has notably gone down. And I've talked with the mayor of Lewis and Carl Chalene, and he's reporting a similar downturn in citizen feedback from ICE operations.
Do you know if the ICE agents that were part of the enhanced activity are gone? I understand they were staying in hotels in Portland and Lewiston. Have you been able to figure out if they're still there?
No, I can't. I mean, part of the non-cooperation posture that Portland has regarding ICE enforcement, it's unlikely, if ever, that they'll communicate directly what they're doing operationally with us.
Tell us about the City of Portland's emergency resolution on ICE activity. What does it aim to do and why?
The emergency resolution was agreed upon in an executive session last week. It authorizes me to act as an agent for the council to sign on to what was a temporary restraining order action in the federal court in Minneapolis, in effect to have ICE stand down and reconsider their enforcement tactics. That operation was discussed in federal court on Friday, and the judge has refused to initiate that order, so it'll be on its way to the Eighth Circuit. Now, although the council gave me that authority last Monday, we're simply publicly ratifying our intent to join and continue to be a partner with Minneapolis and the scores of cities who signed on to that legal action moving forward.
One of the things we're talking about today, Mayor Dion, is how this last 2 weeks has changed businesses, has changed citizens. And I'm wondering about the city of Portland. What do you think about the way it's either changed government or the way that citizens perceive of their local government?
Well, I'd like to think that our residents have seen the Portland City Council stand up and express their misgivings about what ICE was doing and challenging the tactics in which they were applying to enforce their policies. As far as our citizens, I think it's created a level of fear, anxiety, and actual consequence, whether it's economic in terms of their capacity to maintain a household, or emotional as to what it's done to their children who have abandoned going to school or incredibly fearful that if they do go to school, they might witness their parent being taken into custody. So I think that kind of damage, it's going to take some time to heal, you know, and to rebuild trust. On the other hand, I'm so wicked proud of everyone in Maine and in other communities that stood up for their immigrant neighbors and provided the support necessary for them to feel that they truly are part of this community.
Mayor Dion, before you were mayor, you had a long career in law enforcement. That's how you and I know each other. And I'm wondering what your reflections are as you saw how the ICE agents were working in Maine.
I'm disturbed. This is not American policing as I've understood it in the 3+ decades that I worked in that profession. When we went out, our job wasn't to be provocative or challenging or threatening. Our job was to keep the peace and enforce the law. Sending out masked agents carrying long guns, I still don't know why they're carrying these high-powered weapons in order to enforce an administrative warrant or an occasion, possibly a criminal warrant, was the most viable way to do this. It's almost like they knew what they were doing for the psychological and emotional safety of people they would have contact with. And that's just not good policing. You know, I think cops are very appreciative of getting their job done and maintaining community support as they're doing their work. This seemed to be designed to get the opposite result.
Mayor Mark Dion, thanks so much for calling in. Mark Dion is the mayor of Portland. And on the line with us now is Melissa Brennan, who is co-legal director of the Immigrant Legal Aid Project, or ILAP. Thanks so much for calling in, Melissa.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
I know that you have been so busy at ILAP and haven't had a moment free. Are you hearing, we're hearing from Ari, we're hearing from Congresswoman Pingree, that there seems to be a lower level of activity. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Yes, that does match what we're seeing. ILAP is Maine's only statewide immigration legal services organization. And in the face of the ICE operation here, ILAP very quickly set up a coordinated emergency legal response, working with partners at the ACLU of Maine, the University of Maine School of Law's Refugee and Human Rights Clinic, and the Habeas Project of Massachusetts. And we have been providing emergency legal assistance, seeking to secure the freedom of Maine residents who've been swept up in the operation. And what that has looked like is receiving requests for help, often within, you know, minutes or hours of the time when an individual was detained. We were receiving these requests for help in real time. So we can confirm there has been a definite change and a decrease in, a very significant decrease in the volume of requests for help. As of today, we've received requests from 73 people who contacted us to seek emergency legal help for friends, family, and loved ones who were arrested in the operation. And most of those arrests occurred during that period of time from January 20th to 24th.
And Melissa, I need to ask you, that is a lot of cases. Are you equipped to handle that? How large is your staff?
Yes. Well, we have done everything we can to leverage resources to support a strong response. And largely, we have been able to take on all viable cases. As a part of our legal response, we have filed 15 habeas petitions, which are federal court actions, not needed by every person, but in most of these 15 cases, these actions were brought to ensure that the person detained could have the opportunity to request release on bond. And in all of these habeas cases, federal judges have issued emergency orders blocking ICE from transferring people who were arrested in Maine to detention facilities in remote locations. That's something we know that often happens without federal court intervention. We've also, in some cases, just simply requested bond hearings. And just starting this week, judges are beginning to schedule and order bond hearings for our clients. And at that bond hearing, that's where a judge will decide whether a person can be released and live freely while the rest of their immigration court case proceeds. And I'd also just note we are starting to see concrete results. Last week, we secured the release of the first of our clients swept up in this operation. This was a young man who was an asylum seeker. Like so many of those who were targeted, with no criminal record, who has a disability. And we were thrilled to secure his release last week. He's now back home in Maine. Progression of the many other cases. We hope to have Maine residents home soon.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I'm going to read to you an email here from Nancy, but it's a question so many people have. Nancy writes, is anyone tracking what has happened to the 200 people swept up in the ICE surge in Maine? Has DHS released their identities to Maine authorities? Where are they being held? Why were they detained or arrested? Did Senator Collins make any requests in her conversation with Kristi Noem about receiving this information? So, Melissa, I guess I can ask you, what do you know about those 200 people? Have you all been able to figure out where they all are and get access to them for legal help?
Yeah, of those who have requested our help, we are tracking those cases closely. In some cases, someone may have contacted us but then hired a private attorney just in that moment of seeking emergency help. We're tracking all of them. We're seeing where Mainers are held across the country. We have data on, you know, the very few who had some sort of criminal history. Most did not. We have information about whether arrests were targeted. Most of the vast majority were not. These were largely random racial profiling based arrests. So we have a lot of information. I can't speak to requests that others have made, but based on those 73 health requests, we have a real window into who those 200 folks are and where they are now.
Mm-hmm. And before I go, are you optimistic that you will be able to get at least those without a criminal record back to Maine soon?
Very hopeful, particularly for those who we've been able to keep in the region. You know, it is hard when cases come to us a little later in time when help is not requested immediately because ICE does move so quickly to transfer people to remote locations. And it can be much more difficult to carry out the legal work that needs to be done from a distance for a variety of reasons. But overall, I'd say I am hopeful. At the same time, you know, acknowledging all of the harm that is done, even when people are returned.
All right. Well, Melissa Brennan, thank you so much for taking some time. I know you're incredibly busy. Melissa Brennan is with the Immigrant Legal Aid Project, known as ILAP. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the current situation around the surge in ICE agents in Maine and what developments are underway. Joining me for the hour, Patrick Woodcock with the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Also with us, Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House reporter. Share your comments and questions. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is David Webbert, who is managing partner at Johnson, Webbert & Beard. He handles civil rights cases, among other specialties. And David, tell us about a legal action that you have filed for your client who says he was threatened by ICE.
Yes, thank you. It's the one cause of action that's clear that you can sue ICE, and the Supreme Court has not messed it up yet. So back in the 1970s, Congress actually amended the law to make it easier to sue federal law enforcement, recognizing the need for that. And there's plenty of case precedents that support claims like this. So I would say this, the reason I filed this right away was to show people that the rule of law does have some accountability for ICE, because folks in the administration were saying they had absolute immunity. And I think that was encouraging the ICE folks to feel like they could do anything they wanted and terrorize at will and not be professional.
So tell really us what happened. What happened to your client?
It's on a recording, which makes it, you know, very, very good for a lawyer to have. He was observing from a very safe distance. So a couple times, the ICE folks had come to the restaurant across from his street. So they brought it to his neighborhood and his restaurant. And so he was, you know, monitoring to, in some ways, to protect his friends at the restaurant. But he was driving so far behind that twice they went through red lights, including on Route 1, turning left into Route 1 against the red light. And he lost them because he was trying to stay at least, you know, an extra car, have a car between him and them. So he was being super careful. And they went on the side street, and he was on the side street, and then they got out of their car and approached him. And that's when the recording starts. And they immediately start threatening him that he's committed a crime under Section 111, which is obviously something they didn't come up with. This is definitely, you know, coming from the top, accusing people of a crime of impeding. And that law actually says you have to forcibly impede, which the courts have interpreted to mean physical force or contact or something, you know, very close to that. So if you were to, you know, swerve into an ICE vehicle or block it or, you know, hit it, then that would possibly be the crime. Observing from, you know, a car distance, safe car distance away is definitely not. So they're lying about the law. They're perverting the law to support their lawlessness. So it's like the ultimate attack on the rule of law. And we see that with the history of secret police and authoritarian regimes in other parts of the world. So this is, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, in my view, this was a 10 on a civil rights emergency. So that's one reason I don't usually file suit that quickly. But I thought it was an emergency to at least file one claim so people could see, and the notice of claim is in the public realm, they could see that there is a law that does hold ICE accountable.
And David, I'm wondering, is there precedence for what you've done here, or are you hoping to set precedence?
Well, I think it's the first case against ICE in Maine. I mean, they just, you know, they just invaded recently. So that's the precedent. I think one problem is you have to wait 6 months before you can go to court. Otherwise, I would be in the federal court in Maine, which is incredibly fair and due process, 100% due process, and that would be, you know, the way to go. So that's where I will be in 6 months, because the law says I have to wait. And as a lawyer, I follow the rules even when I don't like them, so I have to wait. So it would be a major precedent in Maine, but I also think this claim that they have absolute immunity, it's a lie, but it's being said. So this is a way of showing in practice that that's not true.
And David, do you believe you'll have others that you'll that will join this, or you'll file similar lawsuits for?
Yes, I'm encouraging, and folks of color would have claims as well. And I certainly would like, you know, the actual folks that were racially profiled, and any excessive force is definitely a violation of the Federal Tort Claims Act, false arrest. So yes, I would like to, I'm asking people to contact my law firm, because this, you know, as I've said, this is sort of a civil rights emergency. So I am looking for folks, both recent immigrants that don't quite have citizenship, or even if you do and you got roughed up by ICE, or the observers. I would like folks to join Bob, because he's so brave, but I don't like him to be all by himself as the only person who's standing up to ICE.
David Webert, thanks so much for calling in. David Webert, an attorney with Johnson, Webert & Beard, who handles civil rights cases. Try to get a few of these calls in from our audience. We'll go to Bobby in Sanford. Hi, Bobby. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm finding that our jobs are getting a lot harder, because I work in healthcare, and the recent immigrants in the last 2 years have helped fill all the empty spots that we've had for years in nursing homes and disability homes for adults. And we currently have a good workforce now, but with ICE coming in, these workers, they can't take people to their doctor's appointments or to their community activities, because they're afraid they're going to get picked up. And then what happens to the disabled adult that they were helping?
Yeah, Bobby, thank you for your call. And Patrick, this is your point, that healthcare is one of the places, and especially when we're looking at hospitals and nursing homes, one of the places where this ICE surge has had a really high proportional impact.
Absolutely. This is a key sector that we have seen foreign-born immigrants really be attracted to. That's not only those with permanent residents or naturalized citizens, but those who are asylum seekers. And it is imperative right now. Our healthcare service, especially in rural Maine, is extremely fragile, to the point where it's really a crisis for some healthcare facilities. But to the caller's point, this has been a godsend for a lot of businesses and employers, and it's important that we continue some momentum of integrating this foreign-born population and successfully making them part of our economy.
Patrick, when you hear that Deka DeLock is not running because of the racism she's experienced in the legislature and in her public service and some threats, does that make you fearful in terms of this future integration that you talk about?
I do think we need to have a reflection of the language that we're using. I mean, that it's been very pointed. I actually do think that immigration, if you look at polling data, there is 80% of the public that just wants a pragmatic policy. And we are losing that in our public discourse. We really need to highlight that political leaders, they have our support for pragmatism. This has been dividing our country for so long, but actually the American people want some pragmatic results.
Yeah, and Kevin, I want to return to this topic because, you know, this has been something the American people have been calling for a long time. And I can think of at least twice in my adult lifetime when Congress got real close, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a high priority for a lot of people on all sides of the aisle. And I think the last time that there was a serious effort to do any kind of major immigration reform was during the Obama administration. And you know, there were members of Congress that were working hard on both sides of the aisle to get this done. I was actually working in D.C. at the time. And there was just a lot of optimism at the time that maybe this might be the time when major reforms get done. But it didn't happen because of kind of the partisanship got in the way. And we haven't seen any major pushes since that time. But we hear a lot of talk about it.
And partisanship, one might argue, has gotten worse.
Yeah, certainly hasn't gotten better. That's right.
Yeah. Patrick, what did you want to add to that?
Well, really, it goes back. Former senator there passed now, but Senator John McCain, Senator Ted Kennedy had a bipartisan bill all the way back in the Bush administration. There was an effort, as you mentioned, during the Obama administration. And then lastly, it was 2 years ago, really this week, that a bipartisan bill in the Senate was negotiated. And it really did look as though it had some momentum. And then there was kind of a fallback from President Trump to say, wait, we'll get a better deal, you know, when I'm elected. And, you know, it just never is quite ripe for passage. And it just gets worse and worse. And the political rhetoric gets more intense.
Bobby, thanks for your call. We'll move up to Buckfield and Rick. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hi. About an hour ago, I was driving in Buckfield in the back road, and I passed a full ICE raid of about over a dozen black SUVs, a big white vehicle that said command center, and a bunch of paramilitary guys standing around. And this is in a rural area where there's maybe half a dozen houses in close to a mile. And I called it into, and I videotaped it and sent it into Maine Immigrant Rights. And people should know that they may get a little more clever and be doing things a little quietly, but they're still here.
And Rick, was this at a business or at a home?
No, this was at a private home on a very back road in Buckfield.
Thank you for calling in and telling us about that. Rick calling from Buckfield about what appears to be an immigration raid that he saw just today. Let's see, we will go to Carla, who's calling from Alfred. Hi, Carla. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. So I have witnessed ICE twice over the past couple of weeks. I live in Alfred. One of them was going into the Sanford ICE school. It was approximately 8 in the morning. And then last week, I was driving into Biddeford, and there were a couple of them on the side of the road. And then immediately pulled out behind me. So I guess my question is, so I'm almost 60 and I'm in bad health, and I have never ever in my life carried my birth certificate with me because they're stating that driver's licenses are not proof that you are a U.S. citizen. And I was born in Michigan, so it would be hard for me to get mine. And it's really scary. Like, I have doctor's appointments, like in South Portland, and I told my doctor I'm actually really afraid to drive to South Portland, even though they have, like, a plan in place. It's very disconcerting. And my other question was, where they appear to be able to just go into people's houses. There's been a lot of activity in Biddeford as well.
Yeah.
Can they force a landlord to let ICE into your apartment?
Carla, these are very good questions. Kevin, do you know the answer? Can an ICE agent force a landlord to let somebody into an apartment?
That is a really good question, something I have to look into. I don't. My suspicion is that somebody can still deny, unless they have a judicial warrant, that a person can still deny consent. But they have been operating under these administrative warrants where they say that they can go into a property. But that's actually a really good question. And to the kind of the comments about continued ICE operations, yeah, they said, and Kristi Noem did say that, and Susan Collins did say that they will continue the normal operations. So it's not that we're going to see ICE entirely disappear in Maine, but
yeah. And Carla, we did do a Maine calling program last week, and what the lawyers about some of these legal issues, and what lawyers recommended to people is that they not open their door, but ask the ICE agents to either slip the warrant under the door or hold it up to a window. And when you do so, you look to make sure that it is signed by a judge. So I'm guessing that that rule applies for whether it's a private home or an apartment. I can't tell you whether or not you ought to be carrying more papers. That's beyond. I know that folks in some of the immigrant communities have been encouraging everybody they know to carry their papers, and others have not. So I think that's a personal decision to make. But I appreciate you calling and expressing your concern. Oh, boy, I was going to take some more calls, but we're out of time. I need to thank you, Patrick Woodcock, for joining us for the hour, and Kevin Miller. Patrick Woodcock, President and CEO of the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Kevin Miller, Maine Public State House reporter. Our sound engineer today was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we turn our attention to the prevalence of sports betting, and really more than that, how betting has spilled over into other areas of our life as well and just grows and grows. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.